Welcome to episode 59 of Gallifrey Public Radio. This week we make the best of a bad situation as we do our commentary on Crimson Horror. But first, your hosts. I'm Jay Whitten.
Are we talking adult like Torchwood or adult like Cinemax after 11 p.m.?
And with me are Melissa Mazza.
I demand to be referred to as Sagacity from now on.
And Keir Hansen.
The jockstrap of Rassilon is formidable and large.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But if we get into anything too serious, don't worry. We'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 59 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where tonight we sprinkle a little salt in our shirts, heal all our physical ailments in a closet with no real explanation provided, and generally wish this whole episode was placed on some sort of a rocket and shot into space. We're talking tonight our rewatch commentary of The Crimson Horror, which for any of our listeners over the past year know exactly how we feel about the episode. But that's not going to deter us.
I'm getting paid being here tonight, right?
Yes, we're doubling your actual normal pay, Jay, so you got that going for you. but you know what? We'll try anything twice and three times if you buy us flowers. So we're going to give this a fair shake. I am here in the GPR studios with us tonight, as always, is Jay. Good evening, sir. How are you?
Hello. I'm wishing I weren't here, but okay.
But we're, college try. Melissa is also here in the GPR studios with us, as always. Yes. Melissa, how are we?
Hello. How are you?
Fantastic, as always. And joining us again to help us through these rocky times is Will. Good to hear from you again, sir.
Good evening, everyone. And may I say that this place smells so much better with Melissa here, because last time she wasn't here and it was like a Foot Locker in here.
Thank you, cucumber melon.
So we're going to get through this together. We're going to hold hands and get through these rocky times. But thankfully we've got some interesting news to start things off with tonight. Some developments over the last week. Really good stuff. I'm pretty jazzed about a lot of the things that we've been able to collect over the course of the last 7 days. So Jay, let's lead into this with no delay.
All right. So obviously the big stuff coming up is the news about the Day of the Doctor, and they're starting to release a lot more of this stuff. The Children Need special is going to be this Saturday, and it seems like that is going to be where the official trailer is going to be put out. I'm not sure if this has actually been confirmed. I've heard a lot of rumors and stuff and speculation, but it would seem like this makes the most sense. They've said that there's going to be a Doctor Who something during the Children in Need special. So it seems like this is the logical choice. This is the logical place to put it in.
Well, I've got one hiccup with that. And the fact that I think about most of the times when they've done little special pieces just for the Children in Need fundraisers, it was generally something that was done very lighthearted.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, things like Time Crash and some of those ones where there was absolutely no real peril or anything of that sort. The writing was light and fun and family oriented and so forth. And it was just a little gift. I can see them using that opportunity or with that kind of viewership to air some of this, you know, this information this footage we've been waiting for, but not during the event. It may be something to lead off or broadcast it just prior when they know everyone's starting to tune in. But I would have thought there'd be something else. They'd be doing, you know, some sort of other little gift to the fans for the kids. Because this could be potentially really heavy.
Yeah, and I mean, they might very well. I mean, but we, I mean, it does seem like from this press release, it seems like it is actually going to be coming out on Saturday, whether it's through Children of Need or some other means. I'm not sure, but
right,
we've got something to look forward to.
Absolutely. Well, so in keeping with the awaiting whatever we end up getting this coming Saturday or as we're recording this coming Saturday, for whether it be for the Children in Need or any of those others, we also know that we've got some additional information regarding the Night of the Doctor being the awaited mini episode to precede the Day of the Doctor full anniversary episode. The thing that I'm not quite following, and maybe this is just open for interpretation because of the fact that it's just a choice of words, when they refer to this as being additional material, does that necessarily mean that we're talking about something that was part of the same script as the episode in full, and they've broken it off into its own little lead-in mini-episode? Or when they say additional material, are they talking about the fact that it's something that, you know, in keeping with all of the other stuff we're handing you during this celebration month, this is some additional material that we've done?
I bet you that it's like one of those, you know, obviously it's going to be one of those little mini precursor things, like the little webisode we saw where the doctor meets Clara as a child on the swing set and of that nature.
Okay. So somehow connected, but not necessarily part of the primary plot.
Yep.
Okay. I think that's legit.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they're still not giving us much about it. I mean, we know that the Night of the Doctor has a running time of 6 minutes and 54 seconds. Okay. So I know the theatrical versions that you can go see in the theaters and stuff are, I think they're saying they're like 85 minutes. So it's like 10 minutes roughly of extra stuff. So I don't know if it's going to include this and then something else. There was something else I'd heard was going to be like 13 minutes or something, but I think that was a DVD extra. It's they're putting out so much, you know, like so many different tidbits without giving us any full information that it's hard to make sense of any of it, really.
I say they just go ahead with it. Just start releasing the stuff. All of this at this point, now that we're, you know, 2 weeks away or so, you know, all of this jostling around with, you know, when are you going to see it? How long is it going to be? Who's going to broadcast it on which networks? You know, which countries are going to get which versions at what times and in what distribution format? You toyed with us for months. Months, and we've eaten it all up with a spoon and asked for seconds. At this point, we're in the home stretch. Just let us know, okay, set your DVRs for this, 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 and this.
Yeah.
Go buy your tickets for this and this. And sorry, Canada, or however you're going to do it. You know, it's
poor Canada.
Just put the information out there and let's go.
Yeah. Well,
because I just, and you were, you know, talk about your lead-ins and some of the stuff that we were discussing about times and whatnot. I had been raging for the last couple of weeks about the fact that we were coming down to the wire here, and I still didn't know when the exact broadcast times for all the U.S. versions of some of the primary stuff were going to be, like the episode itself.
Yeah.
Or the
which we still don't know.
Right. Yeah. It's how much at this point. Folks typically have, and I'm going to speak, I do not have cable or satellite into the house here, so we haven't had a DVR going in the house for quite some time. So tell me, you DVR users, typically with any series that you know that's coming about, whether it's a standard network series of 20-some-odd episodes or a BBC series of, or a cable, you know, Game of Thrones thing of 12 or 13 episodes, how far in advance are the broadcast schedules typically posted out there so that your DVR knows to prep for recording on a certain day and time?
It's usually about a week.
Yeah, it changes.
It's that tight?
Yeah, well, it depends on the service that you go with, the, you know, the channel itself. I mean, it's there's a lot of different variables, but yeah, general rule of thumb is about a week. Yeah.
Okay. I'm not as pissed as I was a couple seconds ago, but I'm still kind of pissed. We do at least know, you know, for things like, for anybody who hadn't been following us on Twitter, I was able to pick up on the fact that we had just finally locked in the BBC America broadcast time for the docudrama. So yes. An Adventure in Space and Time will be airing on the 22nd at 9 p.m. Eastern. So at least that one you can start to plan your entire Whovian party weekend around, which I fully intend to.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the theatrical screenings, I believe, are on the 25th, which would be the Monday after the show airs on television. Is that correct? The 3D screenings?
The majority of them, yes. There are select cities that are actually going to have day and time releases, like the global, you know, simulcast. But that's very few and far between. I think there's like 8 theaters in the whole of North America. Right. So it's, yeah, most everyone is going to have to wait until Monday.
Curious if they are obviously going to have to get their copies for airing, maybe even day of, you know, if this is digital distribution or digital broadcast within those theaters, they obviously have to tell their ticket purchasers what the airtime is going to be.
Yeah.
What have they said?
I think I'm not sure. I think most of them are aiming at like 2:30 and then leaving like a little caveat saying, you know, it's subject to change, but it's in that time frame of like the 2 o'clock or, you know, whatever time zone you're in. But you know, that's the thing that seems to be going on right now. But yeah, I don't know how reliable any of that stuff is. But I mean, at the same time, we've known for months that, you know, BBC America, you know, said something a little bit early, and we've all just kind of assumed that that's what it's going to be. And I don't see any reason why it's not going to, you know, it's okay. There's nothing pointing out that, you know, they're changing it. They just, you know, they got their hands smacked because no, we said no, not yet. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Well, I know I got my tickets for Monday night, so that'll be fun.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, excellent. So. Now, in keeping with all of this, and we'll give you another little piece here, and this, you take this for what it is. We're gonna put our big spoiler stamp on this one ahead of time. Although I know Will, you and I were discussing this really briefly just the other day about the fact that a very brief synopsis of the 50th episode plot.
Oh yeah,
released. Mm-hmm. I didn't know when you had first told me that it was out there and that somebody had popped it up onto IMDb. You know, IMDb not really maintaining the same sort of spoiler standards that they once did. I was concerned that this was either going to be complete hokum or it was just going to be someone really trying to, you know, poop on the picnic blanket and release information that they shouldn't. We'll put the spoiler stamp out there for you, but. Now that you've all, you know, muted your headphones if you wanted to, it doesn't seem to be too much being given away.
Yeah. It's very vague. It's really vague.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, and most of the stuff we know from, you know, the early set photos and things like that. So I don't think that they're really giving anything away here. So do we just want to read this verbatim?
Yeah, because the timestamp is what kind of the only interesting piece I saw out of that. So go ahead.
So it says, in 2013, something terrible is awakening in London's National Gallery. In 1562, a murderous plot is afoot in Elizabethan England, and somewhere in space an ancient battle reaches its devastating conclusion. All of reality is at stake, and the Doctor's own dangerous path comes back to haunt him.
Okay.
So not really like anything that we don't already know.
Well, the Elizabeth, like, I remember when we first discovered the Elizabethan thing, I was so torn about whether to call it a spoiler. Like, oh my God. So we get confirmation of that.
Yeah.
Right. Now I'm starting to look at that funky little temporal anomaly sonic screwdriver toy that I bought, you know, whatever we were talking about maybe 12, 14 months ago. And I said, I wonder if they're actually going to be using this from an episode or if they just released this for fun, because it was the one that was like kludged together from, you know, a present day, an Elizabethan one. And then there was another component that was sort of steampunky and whatnot. And I'm like, I wonder what this really tied into or whether they just did it for the hell of it so you could have your own mix and match sonic screwdriver. And now I'm wondering again whether even the creative toy makers guys knew what the hell was going on or were somehow feeding into this without even knowing what the hell Moffat had in mind.
Yeah.
But interesting that they did go Elizabethan this time and not Victorian, which has been their go-to so that they could involve the Paternoster gang.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is going to be about his marriage to Elizabeth I. I'm calling it now.
I don't know. They've dropped enough comments and stuff like that. I think that one's pretty much covered.
Right.
I'm just saying, I call it now, Melissa says. if you're a betting person.
Put your quarters on the table.
And now the ancient battle drawing to a conclusion. Well,
yeah, that,
if that's your time war.
Well, I was just going to add in that that's actually a different brief synopsis that is on the IMDb site. They have something that's one sentence long. Shall I read it to you?
Spoiler warning, mute yourself for the following 20 seconds. Go ahead, Will.
Okay. The Doctor and Clara are still stuck in the Doctor's timeline, and the only way out is to open the lock on the Doctor's darkest day, the Time War.
Okay.
Huh. Yeah, that's a bit more spoilery, but at the same time, IMDb not being exactly the font of stability that, you know, we might want it to be, that seems more like a fan got overzealous and said, well, I know exactly what this is going to be. Let's put it here.
Okay.
I don't know. I think that would be very cool if that's what's going on.
Yeah, I'm not saying that that's not exactly what's going to happen, but unless it's been officially released from the BBC, I'm not ready to say, wow, that's where we're going. So.
Well, based on the scope and scale of what what Stimo claims is going to be addressed in this episode, without going into any details, but just talking about the sheer size of what it is that they're attempting to do, or that they had been attempting to do through this entire thing, something like the conclusion to the time war would be of that scale.
Mm-hmm.
But then the mind reels at, well, how do you conclude something that's been suspended? You know, and on and on. I mean, this. Do you want to segue straight into this this latest little bit of a Moffat interviewing that we've got here, Jay?
Oh yeah, let's talk
about it. Because it's another one of these. You know, I'm talking in circles. I'm going to get very enthusiastic about things and not tell you jack.
All right. So instead of a spoiler warning, we're just going to go ahead and throw the rule number one warning on here.
Steamo lies.
Yeah. So he says that the. With the 50th anniversary, we are going to get the, quote, best ever entrance into the TARDIS, end quote.
a lot of smoke, a lot of lights.
Yeah, so just say, the rest of the episode is really just bollocks, but the intro sequence is going to be top-notch.
Oh, you know what? He'll just steal the idea from the fan-made one.
Exactly. It's a cracker.
I love that.
No. He's saying, like, the way that it seems to me reading over it, the wording that he's using is saying that when they actually go into the TARDIS, like, so when the characters walk into the TARDIS, that's going to be the best entrance that we ever get.
Better than smaller on the outside?
Yeah, well, I mean that's the entrance that they always wanted to get was the walk in from the outside. You see the police box, and they actually go into the TARDIS set and go around and whatnot. So that's what they've been striving for years, and they actually got to put that on screen. So this might be a refined version of that. You know, it's right.
Bearing in mind they're doing this in 3D now, so it'll give them that sort of sweep and scale. Being able to take us into the interior, which we know will be 11th's interior, obviously from all of the promotional photography we've seen, we're going with that set.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is they were discussing the 3D elements of the Day of the Doctor, and Moffat says they were in his mind from the start, and that unique dimension will offer the best ever entrance into the TARDIS.
Mm.
So apparently if you're not going to see it in 3D, then it's not going to be the best ever. It's just going to be an entrance. I don't know.
Oh, look, they're inside.
Oh, sonic screwdriver pointed at my face. Huh?
I don't know. But he did go on.
Matt Smith's chin almost put my eye out.
I'm going to watch it on a black and white. Black and white, 14-inch, 4x3. Just, keep it old school. Like it's the first
stopping
Doctor.
It every 20 minutes and make people wait another week to see the next 20 minutes.
On VHS.
Bastards. Just done with audio and a bunch of still shots. Goddamn reconstruction episode. But in the same interview, he did go on doing a little bit more fawning about how well things are going with Capaldi.
Mm.
So very pleased at the fact that, we're not, I don't think we have to worry about the kind of interpretation that he's going to apply to it, because he's versatile enough that we don't have to think, this is just going to be such and such a character. This is going to be Frobisher, with the TARDIS key in his pocket, or this is going to be so and so. The more I've gone and dug out some of Capaldi's other work, whether it be like the film In the Loop that you can catch on Netflix, or some of the other appearances he's done on some of the various BBC series along the way, he's definitely versatile enough. And even in the stuff that he's done within these last few years, where he's got that kind of the older look, the grizzled kind of look that he carries. But it's good to know that every single person that has been involved in some of the initial preparation for productions here has been overwhelmingly pleased with how fast he's transitioning into everything and how involved he wants to be with it all. Everything from the costumes down to everything. So I'm so excited about this, and I just hope that we get to see more than just a quick glimpse of him in the Christmas episode.
Mm-hmm.
Him falling out with the bow tie going, get this thing off of me. So
some other news that we've got coming up. I'm not sure where this story came from, but apparently there's some information has come out about Patrick Troughton and ideas he had for playing the Doctor when he first started. The headline here says that Patrick Troughton considered playing the Doctor in blackface.
I found that piece of news and read it like four times to make sure that it was not the Onion or anything.
And there was no second Patrick Troughton episode after that.
Pretty much the end of it right there.
Yeah,
but it's so that you really need it. You'll have to get a hold of this. You know, when you go read through the article, as we'll have it in the link dump, go ahead and pass through to the document from the BBC archives, because this is the fascinating one. You know, that's got it's a breakdown. It's a character plot that they had done for the Second Doctor, and you know, it has things like, you know, his physical appearance, his mannerisms, and things of that sort, and it's got all this stuff in it that you saw never really worked through, like his mannerisms, you know, vital and forceful. His actions are controlled by his superior intellect and experience, whereas at times he is a positive man of action. At other times he deals with the situation like a skilled chess player, reasoning and cunningly planning his moves. He has humor and wit and an overwhelmingly thunderous rage which frightens his companions and others. Well, okay, maybe I can see some of that survived into the way Troughton, you know, played our cosmic hobo. But can you go to the physical stuff? You know, facially as strong, you know, piercing eyes on the explorer or a sea captain. His hair is wild and his clothes look rather the worse for wear. Obviously spares very little time and bother with his appearance. Okay, got it. In the first serial, he wears a fly-blown version of the clothes associated with this character. Well, we didn't get into the fur coat, thankfully. But it's like, you know, they start describing that the change that he went through is an experience not unlike an LSD trip. It's written in here. Reliving some of the whole, yeah, it's amazing. It's like, you know, it is as if he has had the LSD drug. It is as if he has had the LSD drug. And instead of experiencing the kicks, he has had the hell and dank horror, which can be its effect.
Well, it sounds like they read this right before they designed Colin Baker's coat.
Exactly. And waking up screaming and clammy with sweat, he puts on a coat made of about 7 different other patchwork pieces of crap.
And a pin of a cat with paint.
Yes.
So, anyway, yeah, that's there in our show notes if you want to read that.
Just will of it. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a trip. It's definitely a trip.
Well, you guys go ahead with the Crimson Horror, and I'm just going to sit here and read these notes.
Yeah, it's probably more fascinating.
You're not getting away with that.
You get the better end of that deal. But so the Doctor Who kids books that have been coming out all through the year, we finally have the author of the 11th book. And while we didn't call it, we called it. And
we sort of, yeah. Well, this is, I went back, made sure that we were kind of legit on this. This was not our most likely choice. This was our preferred choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. So Neil Gaiman is going to be penning Nothing O'Clock, which is the 11th Doctor book.
So that will be available to you. In fact, there are a couple of pages available out there for preview. If you want to take a look at how it opens up, it's kind of interesting. It's about the whole idea of this villain, the Kin, who had been kept in a very specific prison designed by the Time Lords that is a millisecond out of step with present time, so that they have no hope of escaping. So they are free to roam within their prison and do so, but they have no chance of escaping because they are never in time. With this now released and all this information, now you can officially head over to Amazon and pre-order your copy, which I believe is February 4th. The print copies will be available for single book bound distribution within the States. So and is Amazon Prime eligible? So get your copy now. It's about $10, real cheap.
Hey, speaking of Amazon, really quick, I just want to say that I was trolling around on Amazon UK today. And they have a lot more Who toys than regular Amazon that are fun to look at. And you could actually buy them. You could go to the Amazon UK and do the same thing and have them sent overseas this way. Of course, you're paying pounds and supposed dollars and doing the crossover. But they have a lot more fun stuff.
There is, yeah. The one group, CC, that does the majority of the licensed and sanctioned BBC toy sets, especially when it comes to their, I call them the Lego knockoffs. Yeah. That they do in that 1/8 size are extensive. And you can go ahead and you can get them here stateside, you know, head into Forbidden Planet or something like that and grab yourself all you want. But you are going to be paying through the nose for what it costs to have those things brought over. Not that ordering them direct from BBC Co. UK is going to save you much. because your shipping costs will be pretty hefty. And obviously, you know, Prime shipping does not apply overseas.
Yeah.
But yeah, the accessibility to it is actually pretty extensive. Cool stuff.
All right.
That's actually how I got access to the first two seasons of Doctor Who when it came out, was going through Amazon UK before it started airing here. So
yeah, it beats getting stuff on the shady tip through eBay and that sort of thing. So, are we ready to get into a real comfy chair with this?
Hang on, wait a minute. One last thing that I wanted to throw out here is there's actually going to be a Doctor Who quiz coming up on November 16th. If you go to geekswhodrink.com, it's a trivia thing that they've got all over the place, but a lot of times in bars and stuff you'll see it advertised. But they do all kinds of different things, and frequently they do themed events. And on November 16th, they will have Don't Blink, a Doctor Who quiz. And it's going to be in 20 different cities from Albuquerque to Tucson. You know, they've got them all over the place: Salt Lake, Madison, Kansas City, Colorado Springs. So you just go over to geekswhodrink.com and check that out. The link will be in the show notes as well. But see if there's one close to you and go try it out. It looks like it's going to be a ton of fun.
Yes, go in, be the designated ringer, clean house, win all the swag, and take photos to send them back to us so we can live vicariously through you.
I'm already
Melissa
signed up.
Refuses to go to Brooklyn.
I'm already signed up for the one in San Antonio, so I don't know. I'm feeling like there's going to be an expectation put on me that I might not be able to live up to.
That's really my reason for not going to Brooklyn.
Well, Jay, you found that you've actually got a lot more camaraderie down there than you thought with some of your cons and stuff. You were surprised to see how much of a Whovian turnout you've got down there.
Yeah, and actually, the Firehouse pub that it's going to be at down here is anticipating having to turn people away. So, I'm excited.
Cool.
But anyway.
Well, let's get equally excited about this fantastic cracker of an episode.
Yeah, no.
Let's at least pretend. Let's be actual.
Feign interest.
I don't know if I can manage that for this episode.
It's not that bad. I mean, even if something's bad, it's at least bad entertaining. I mean, you got Mrs. Peel in it.
That's it. Last week, I had a slight issue with my video, so I made sure beforehand that this one was okay. And so I sat down and I watched the first couple minutes just to make sure my video worked. And the whole time, I'm just like, I really don't want to do this again. God, I don't want to watch this episode again. Really? Is that... Oh, this is so horrible. I don't want to... Oh, man. So,
you're like, my computer seems to still be having problems. Oh, well.
It's like a Band-Aid. Rip it off quickly.
I'm going to find 10 positive things about this episode as we watch it. 10. I will count them off, damn it.
Okay, number one, Ginny in the skin-tight leather suit. Number two, it ends at some point.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, I'm spent.
Moment by moment. So, all right. Go ahead and get yourselves queued up, kids. We will obviously be starting from most of our various recordings at as close to zero as possible. See. So you will come up on the cobblestone streets of Yorkshire in 3, 2, 1, go.
Ah, cobblestone.
Yeah. Oh, look, cobblestone.
You called it.
Yorkshire. It's like that Monty Python episode.
The year is 787. Well, AD. Of course AD. I don't need to say AD.
I really don't understand this. Like, why did he drag his wife up to the hallway before going into the Red Room? Like,
she followed him.
Purpose. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
That is a bunch of scary corsets.
Yeah, that is... I like the fact that they can make the ladies so sinister.
Mm-hmm.
I have to be honest. I mean, that's Diana Rigg, and I am heartbroken that she looks that bad.
I think she looks great.
I mean, this is Mrs. Peel.
I think it suited her for when she was on Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I mean, you're comparing her to 1963 or so. Like,
you know, I have fond memories.
I got to say, this Undertaker is severely creepy, too.
I love him.
I like him, yeah.
I hate the fact
he
that
sells it.
I hate the fact that like he can't decide whether or not to use the H. You know, sometimes it's the Crimson Horror, other times it's the Crimson Aura. Like, he's been hanging out with Wing too much.
Yes, he's French Canadian British.
Oh, look, it's a TARDIS
door.
That is cool.
I never noticed that. It looks like my door.
Who's that lady in the veil? I can't tell if she's a lizard or not.
Yeah, I know. That is the definition of thinly veiled.
I don't know if she ever really attempted to disguise what she was, or whether she wore that just as a means of, you know, a little additional protection from UV light, or who knows what.
I think it's a commentary on society where they don't even look at the female until she's unveiled. I was just kidding, but now I kind of think that, yes. I'm going to go with that.
The repeated faint gag, come on, that's funny.
Yeah, yeah, that's...
it is.
So there's okay. Number one. Repeated faint gag. Classic comedy.
But look, this is the second show where we have pictures developing in a red room.
Yeah, but that wasn't even like a truly red room. Like they sold it as a dark room in Hyde, but in this one it's like, quick, put a red light on that, or red filter on that light over there, and that's it.
They just had a lot of red gels left over from, the one on the submarine. I'm going to say this two podcasts in a row.
They're being frugal. And that's what makes BBC a better production company in general, is because they waste
money. Okay, get ready. Here we go. And bad door opening.
That's in the running for best going on to this artist.
I was
going
to say, if that's consideration, then yes, anything is going to be the best entrance there. Yay, Strax. All right, Strax is number two.
This is a solid Strax episode because he does get back into uniform and gets to shoot lasers.
Lasers.
Oh, I just remembered the Strax joke in this.
Yeah. What are scissor grenades? I want one.
I love his looks. Just generally. Do you need an excuse for scissor grenades? Triple blast brain splitters? I mean, the party game's right there. I don't know. Maybe this is just like a Victorian era kind of thing, but I don't understand, like, going to a church to just sit there and, you know, hear someone talk about how horrible things are.
Oh, you haven't been to some of the churches in the Deep South.
You haven't been to church lately, have you?
Yeah, really, church, period.
Spend all day there, yeah. Because of turpitude, that's why.
This is like a weird Victorian thing. They did stuff like this.
Hmm.
Of the show?
We could only wish.
Wow, a poster!
I can't see it. I'm more than 8 feet back away from things.
Well, her daughter's blind, so...
How does she know she actually got the whole cover off of the painting? She could be standing right in front of the thing.
Well, they say, so she knows they got the gist of it.
Too soon?
And the eight people standing behind her not moving isn't creepy?
I'm trying to make out the circus poster that's on the side, you know, that says Dastardly Donna is in town. Who's Dastardly Donna? Is that Donna Noble?
Yeah. Just when she's, you know, that time of the month.
No, seriously. No, I wonder if some of these posters are like
just not just have some fun stuff on.
Yeah, there was one behind Strax that was Winifred.
I hated that whole exposition between them, though, because it's clear that that's all that's going on. It's like they're trying very thinly veiled as a conversation. And here, I mean, she knows the thing is on the floor, and yet she feels all around the top half of the door.
Like, oh, we are really ripping into this tonight, aren't
we?
Okay. Gloves are off.
Well, I mean, because one of the best things about this is the acting. So you have to think, as an actor, why wasn't she saying, why would I look on the top of the... I think it's fair game.
Okay.
Hey, it's Fainty Guy.
That is a snazzy top hat. Fainty Guy. Look up. And down he goes. So to speak.
The look of disgust that Dan Starkey is able to get through all of that makeup is fantastic.
Yeah.
As little as 80%.
See, I think I've been playing too much Assassin's. Yeah, I've been playing too much Assassin's Creed because all I want to do is like, you know, jump up, and get all the way to the top, and dive off. And she has lovely dental work. This one,
yes,
Pensatucky. Yeah. You guys watch Orange is the New Black?
That's what happens when you eat a bag of Oreos before you go wait in line for. I do have to take me. I'm so addicted to these little chocolate cookies.
They are addicted to this crack. Have you seen these studies lately?
Yeah. Yes, the rats turning down the crack cocaine to go get some Oreos.
I've got to search this up.
Those are my kind of rats.
I have not heard of this.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone is so intent on waiting in line that they don't bother looking to the side.
Yeah, right. No one's
those
looking.
People in the back.
I swear that coin looked like an American quarter.
And I love how she falls over right there next to her, like, you know, quick, distract them.
Yeah.
Right next to me. Get everyone to come over here next to me.
But on the floor.
The first time I watched it, I did not understand the meaning of this. Like, I couldn't get why this was going on. And like, it failed to register that there was a factory in this place. Like, I think Strax mentioned it like once, but they never really played it up that there was a factory here. So I didn't get this.
You know, I suspect that this is what the inside of the Celebrity Center of Scientology looks like.
Just a lot of noise at the front door and absolutely empty inside.
Yeah. All these people in line saying yes, yes, yes. By the way, the thoughts expressed by Will do not represent...
You can send them to Melissa, Gallifrey Public Radio. I'll take it. It's fine.
And you can just forward them to me. And
I think Scientology is one of those things you can crap on universally and no one really cares.
Until they sue you.
They have ears everywhere. Trust me.
Litigious.
Really great sets and costumes in this one. They really, really went full on.
That's one thing that the BBC knows how to do is period pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's not even believable that they're really eating soup, but the props make it. You believe you're there.
Yeah, I don't see any liquid in those bowls.
Yeah, and they're slurping awfully loud for...
That's got to itch.
Slightly.
Well, she has a condition, so.
See, I don't like sand in my bathing suit. I'm not going to go putting salt down my shirt.
You sweat, don't you? Same thing.
Grainy sweat?
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a slight difference between, you know, slightly salt water and then, you know, table salt.
Forgive me for just making conversation.
How dare you comment during a commentary? It's not what we're here for. The stairs have no risers. Sorry, dollhouse reference.
She also came up the stairs to climb down three steps when she came to the landing.
Well, that actually is kind of accurate.
This is an addition. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they weren't zoned for it, but they're big doorway.
No, I just don't understand why there's hay all over.
Well, it's kind of like newspaper in a hamster's cage. You know?
Yeah, but you're not going to keep horses up there. Yeah. Okay. Please.
If he has such a hard time, like, moving anything, like, if he's so stiff, how did he get onto the floor to reach her?
I don't know. The inconsistency about how debilitating this condition was one of the key things that bothered me about it. And mm-hmm. and maybe that was just Smith being a little inconsistent, but somebody should have caught it.
Well, if they had explained it at all, it might have helped.
He's been rubberized. And yet he can groan, but cannot make words.
But he can somehow eat, even though his jaw seems locked in place.
You guys have no suspension of disbelief.
He coated certain his episodes in wax.
But yet his hair is exactly the same. His hair has not been waxed.
The doctor's hair is very important. That I will suspend disbelief for.
This reminds me of, like, there was a movie I watched when I was a kid, and I think it was, like, Solomon's Temple or something, and they would dip people in molten gold.
Okay.
Just, I don't know, for some reason that reminds me of it. Probably because it was so traumatizing when I was a kid. It's stuck in my head.
That would be traumatizing now.
Yeah. There's an unfortunate smelting accident.
Now, is the wax a scented wax, and what kind of scent would it be?
Yes, like it's
cinnamon.
Kind of a,
it looks like Christmas time.
It's blueberry.
I was picking nice up on Christmas something more like pie. Mulberries. Yeah, it's a mulberry smell. Well, look, your jaw's working really well.
Yeah,
make words.
No, and here are clothes so you can change while you're in here.
Oh, good. Now you can bend your arms and grasp things.
Uh-huh. I feel like
but you couldn't open the door.
Wesley in Princess Bride. Like, you
set the screwdriver to magic.
Yeah.
There's another setting.
I went to a Halloween party, and I went as the fourth Doctor. Oh, hello.
Okay, it was worth the kiss to get the slap.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love Jenny.
Item number three that I enjoy about it, because when Smith is in full weirdo mode, this flashback, even with the flickering screen and the cigarette burns and the
I love this
tinny audio.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. Mm-hmm. It's a Tegan reference.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And another one. It's a match factory?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because that way, if it ever burns down, it's a plausible excuse.
So this Halloween party that I went to had a theme that I was unaware of, that it was witches and wizards. And since I went as the Doctor, it was justified that his sonic screwdriver was a wand and that he could be a wizard.
He's very much a wizard. There you go. Definitely justify that.
Yeah. By interpretation, sure. Take a sort of, Connecticut and King, Yankee and King Arthur's Court sort of thing. The scientist is seen as the magician for science you don't understand.
I do love the Doctor's Yorkshire accent here.
That's disconcerting.
Yep.
Yeah, a little bit.
But vacuum domes keep you fresh.
Poor Ada.
Poor Ada? For what? Because of the fact that now all of a sudden she has a pang of morality? Because one survived?
She's complicit in all this.
Yeah.
Well, how much has she actually been told about what's going on? You know, if she's grabbing, like, you know, plastic arms and stuff, how's she supposed to know what's going on?
It's heavily implied she knows, but you're right.
Yeah, she says sometimes the preservation process. Keep the casualties to as little as 80%.
Okay, Matt, in this scene, you're going to do your best Frankenstein walk.
And this guy.
Who looks happy about it. Check it out! Wow! His hair was jacked up.
Yeah. Well, it's because it's not Matt Smith's famous hair.
Time Lord hair rejects goop.
I really, really hope that Capaldi doesn't use the screwdriver even a tenth as much as Matt Smith.
I agree. Mm-hmm. But so far, it's been proven that if you're going to audition to be the doctor, you have to have really great hair.
More than a black guy.
Eccleston had barely no hair.
What if there was a bald guy? That would be the...
I don't know. I think that Tennant was the first one that actually looked like he cared about his hair. I mean, you know, the first doctor or the eighth doctor looked like they may have run their comb through it occasionally, but...
No, I mean like in the last, you know, 9, 10, 11...
Okay.
Oh, here we go. Here's the joke.
Yeah.
I never got that for the longest time.
Oh, God.
Although, I got to be honest, I laughed my ass off.
I really laughed in disbelief. I seriously sat there. I'm like, they cannot be doing this. They cannot seriously be doing this. Thomas.
I watched this episode with a friend of mine, and all we did through the entire episode was just giggle and laugh.
That's about what it's good for.
Yeah.
I watched this episode completely smashed and still hated it.
What is that pumping thing behind them?
It's the vacuum.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that is a creepy look on Claire's face there, though.
My pet ran away! They really play with color temperatures in this episode, like...
Mm-hmm.
From scene to scene, the color temperature completely changes.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that I liked Ada in this episode. That's like the one thing I carried away from it, thinking that was worth it.
Yeah.
What a bitch.
Can you imagine having to wear those clothes every day of your life?
I'd be pretty crabby too.
I don't know, Keir. I think you could carry off a corset.
A bustle?
A bustle, you know, and a corset?
You know, it would really suck is if she had those clothes on and everybody else was like in jeans and t-shirts and stuff. And they're like, no, this is normal clothing. Everybody wears this clothing. What's the magic steamy box that fixes everybody?
A lot of steam in this episode.
Item number 4 that's great about this episode.
Underworld
Jenny.
I say she's Emma Peel Jenny. It's a Diana Rigg tribute. I've said it before.
I would agree with you. I would definitely agree with you. I didn't see it before, but now I do.
And see, the thing that bothered me about that is she only took out three people. And like they did like the whole fast, slow, fast
item
thing
number
just to
five.
Strax
with a repeating laser rifle.
Yeah.
And a big grin.
Yeah, I would have rather seen her take out a few more.
Yeah. Like really amp up the action, choreograph the fight and stuff instead of just like, oh, I knocked this guy down and then hit two other people who just fall down because I elbowed them in the chest.
Right.
Sorry, that's not a debilitating strike right there.
Yeah, I mean, they set it up nicely, and there was no payoff. Oh, I almost forgot about her.
I mean, I do like the fact that this episode, the Paternoster gang kind of carried it for the first third. It was a nice change of pace.
I'm going to be honest. Clara is the first companion in the new series that I really still don't care for.
If she weren't so inconsistent, it wouldn't be an issue. I think that's the major thing, is just the inconsistencies in her character. It makes it difficult to really like her or really dislike her.
Yeah, like, I like her, but I haven't warmed up to her yet. I'm not connected to her. But I like her.
Precisely. If you're doing comparisons with the other modern companions that you do click with, whoever that may be, and it doesn't even matter which one it is, but there are some characteristics of them or the nature of what they represent or what they accomplish for the viewing audience that was your personal, what you gravitated towards. Because of the fact that now we've established that we're dealing with all of these variants of Clara, some are more flip, some are more glib, some are more intelligent, some are more sassy or what have you, that you can't determine which one best resembles what you enjoy in a modern companion. Because there's no guarantee you're going to get that the next week. Yeah. Now that I would assume that for the rest of, or for what at least we'll get through Series 8, we'll be pretty much traveling with the same iteration. Mm-hmm. Now you really get to decide whether or not the one that we're going to be given is the one you really enjoy.
Well, yes and no. I mean, this Clara, for the past several episodes, up until the end of the series. So it's the same Clara, the last second half of this season series. And She never did it for me, and I was on board. Going back to the new series, Martha, I guess, was not in Club Martha. I still liked her. Clara's the only one I'm like, meh. Once again, the views of Will do not represent the views of Gallifrey Public Radio.
Personally, I like Martha herself, but I didn't think the writing for the episode she was in was that great. For Clara, I'm not sure if it's Clara herself or the episodes. I still haven't figured it out.
Yeah,
true. And we've discussed the fact that we weren't always certain that the writers or that the episodes, the final edits of the episodes, or the final cuts of the screenplays for these episodes as they were handed over for production got sufficient final review by the man in the big chair.
See, and that's the thing. I think that's what it is. I like Clara in Asylum of the Dalek. I liked her in The Snowman. I liked her in Bells of St. John, which I didn't even like that episode, but I liked Clara. I liked her in The Name of the Doctor. When she is in Moffat's hands, I like her. And a couple other people have done her right, so I really think that it is the writing. See, this scene here kind of won me over on Ada. It was the only part of the writing that really I enjoyed.
Mm.
Mr. Sweet was introduced previously as Willy Wonka.
In the very same way.
For those of you who are not drawing the connection with the giant bottles of Ernesto and Giulio Gallo bottles of wine. I mean, man, that's all I'm thinking is like, that's a big ass bottle of nasty Italian table wine.
Now here we have the exposition of the entire plot.
Yeah.
Whatever, it's about time.
Yeah, I've got to say, it's not like Mark Gatiss to hold mystery for this long.
But once again, I really do love the costumes and the sets. And I have to say that this episode had some great sets.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, the classic reveal of the evil device behind the wall on the pivoting floor. That was great. I'm calling that one number 6 because I love that. I might have to take away 1 point, though, for the little space leech.
Although, you have to give the space, spoiler alert, you're going to have to give the point back for the death of the space leech, which is pretty awesome.
Oh, no, there was that moment where she, like, ripped open her shirt, and it's like, oh, wait, it's just a worm. Never mind.
Thank God.
Oh, thank God, it's just a worm.
I do like the fact that she enjoys the fact that she's the villain right here. You know?
Yes, I agree with you. Throw the third switch. Oh, Tom.
Keep expecting her to start playing Phantom of the Opera on that thing.
Yes, Drax doesn't look out of place at all in that outfit.
Nah. Yeah, I'm sure it's the outfit that's going to throw
people. Did you notice the badger in the corner? Oh, did you guys catch the badger in the corner?
No,
I missed it.
Hold on, let's see if they put it back in the frame when they cut back.
Oh, yes, I see it. Bottom right.
Nice.
I'm calling that number 7.
Now I see
a stuffed badger.
Is somebody writing these down?
I think here is.
I need to write words.
All right, listeners, here it's on you. Put the list in the comments.
I wonder what some of this other stuff she's got around the room is, though. Set dressing always fascinates me. What they choose to put in is just these odd little throwaway incidentals in the background. Wouldn't be surprised if she had like a cyber mat under glass or something. This is a good scene.
Yeah,
it actually is. Okay, there's number 8.
What would have been great is if she was just turned slightly sideways and was like yelling off her right shoulder. Because she wasn't sweeping her cane when she walked up.
She's screaming at Claire or something.
Or at the badger. I have to apologize in advance to all of our blind listeners. I'm not trying to be as callous as I sound.
The wig make fun of the deaf ones, right?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Sorry, no.
Again, any complaints you have, please direct them to Will at... No. Oh, suddenly she's a loving mom. Mm-hmm.
Where did the gun come from? Wait, I don't want to know. I've seen where she keeps her worm.
The Americas. Nah, she wouldn't.
See, I'm okay with him using a chair as long as he's not using the sonic screwdriver.
Yeah, well, it's...
If she's not being chased, why is she dragging Ada up backwards with the gun to her head instead of just pushing her up ahead of her?
Just in case.
More dramatic that way.
Key word in the sentence, she's your daughter.
Yeah. The secondary firing mechanism that's halfway up the stairs.
Yeah. Okay, should we... a rocket and...
How hot are those flames going up the silo there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're not shooting up. Yeah, and they're not getting burned, exactly.
I love the steampunk rocket, though.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the red wine!
The woman with the space leaks stuck to her chest is calling them freaks.
Yay, Strax.
And Strax actually got the gender right, did you notice?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
You know, if you're a bad guy, never give a speech before you shoot the good guy. Just shoot.
And never have a standoff at, you know, some large height.
Yeah, right. See, over here. Just going to the store, getting some cigarettes.
I think I left the kettle on. I gotta go.
They made the eyes on the space leech way too big. Like
it's candy gumdrops there.
It's like either make it cute or make it ugly. Don't try for both, because then it's cuddly. Just...
I'm glad they went with, like, the Muppet Leech as opposed to, like, CG Leech, so...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. But they should have given it, like, beady little eyes to make it just creepy, or, you know, like, segmented eyes, something to make it so that they weren't trying to make it cute.
No eyes, like an actual leech?
Hey, there's that, too.
The Earth's shattering kaboom.
Oh, look, the Death Star just blew up. Nice aim for a blind girl.
Yep.
But I do love the kill. That's great.
It is great.
Number 9 of good things.
I want to know how things turn out for Ada.
Mm. She becomes famed mathematician Ada Lovelace.
Okay. Headcanon accepted.
Who was blind?
Come on, we never find out how things go for people he leaves behind.
I know.
Yep.
Did that seem very much like Serenity to anyone else? When when Mal asked Book, like, you're going to have to explain to me how you know so much about this one day. And Book says, no, no, I don't. And faint number three.
3, 2, 1.
All right, now we lose 5 points here.
Goes off the rails.
Yeah.
I'm a kid, and I'm really good with computers, and therefore you're going to tell me all your secrets because I've got a laptop.
And I mean, the thing is, this does not even like remotely fit.
Yeah, who took those pictures? Who was at the haunted house that took the pictures? The creature?
Yeah, who took the pictures, and why is it that even though they took those on the location, they still look like bad Photoshop shots? Even though they could have taken them right there on set.
Well, it's because they threw this on at the end. Like, this has nothing to do with anything. There's like, we need a way of blending in, like, to the next episode.
I think this was, like, a quick, we have to have her see an old picture of another version of herself and start trying to figure it out type thing.
How is that even like remotely a threat? So if my kids came up to me and said, hey, our babysitter's a time traveler, I'd be like, okay, you need to lay off the TV. It's like, that's not a threat.
Yeah, good point.
Well.
I stay out of dad's liquor cabinet.
Exactly.
As you can see from your scenes from the next week, we will be discussing the return of Mr. Gaiman to the helm in writing an episode that we were sort of 50-50 on, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
It looks like the Doctor becomes a Borg.
Yeah. But we do get to look forward to some great Smith-on-Smith argument scenes.
Yeah.
So definitely see some great acting work out of Matt in the next episode. So next week will be Nightmare in Silver, which was previously named The Last Cyberman, which now, in retrospect, I'm probably glad they changed the title because it wouldn't have really fit what we ended up seeing.
Yeah, true. Mm. All right, so what did everybody think of this episode?
It wasn't as bad. I know you were about to say it was still terrible, but it was
still it's still problematic. It's still very problematic.
Oh, absolutely.
I vote still problematic.
Let me put it this way. It's not the kind of episode that you would be like, okay, this goes into the canon, and I'm going to follow it through for a large story arc. It's the kind of episode that is almost a throwaway that you're like, yeah, this is ridiculous, but it's fun.
I think if it's going to be self-contained, it needs to be self-consistent, and there were like inconsistencies, so true. All in all, not 100%.
Maybe I'm mixing it up with the fact that I actually had a good time watching it with you guys.
Oh, it's our fault. Thank you.
Yay, we can make a bad episode better. Yeah, I'm not buying it. Sorry, Will. The only positive thing I can say about this episode is now that we have done the commentary, I never have to watch it again.
It's true.
Ouch.
I'm sorry. This episode, I can't stand it. This is my personal like worst episode ever, and that could change next week when I watch something else. But right now, I can't stand this episode, and it's horrible. And yes, there are moments where it makes me chuckle, but mostly it's out of pity.
Wow. So you've now heard that Jay actually dislikes this episode more than Fear Her.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah, wow. I do.
Wow.
Yeah.
So next week, we're actually going to be doing a supplementary episode where we watch Fear Her. And just see, frame by frame,
Oh, geez. Yeah.
Well, no. I honestly think in this one, it was a matter of, there were so many little aspects of it that were just, it was not a matter of suspending disbelief or just rolling with the fantasy of the story. It was just really, really rushed, not well thought out aspects that tripped over themselves within the same episode that just kept pulling me out of it. So I couldn't enjoy it. I was always watching it as something to wait for the next thing to go wrong rather than waiting for it to resolve itself, because it just never did.
Yeah, and I think that's what it is it's the whole time I was waiting for something to happen that, you know, I would enjoy or something to redeem it. And every time I'd get a moment like that, something would follow right after it to undo it or to make it not consistent or something. And it's just going to, like, you know, give me something that sticks with it. And then I think, Now that I can actually watch it, or I've watched it and I'm thinking about it clearly right after we watched it, it's the last, the scene that they buttoned on at the end that makes it so horrible.
Like, yeah. No.
Up to that point, I was like, I don't remember why I thought this was such a horrible, oh, wait, there it is.
Yeah.
I still don't obviously like it.
Obviously, that felt like an afterthought. That was like something that's like, oh, we have to tie this in and somehow make this more complicated so that it can tie in for next week's episode and tie in with everything else that we're doing with the large story arcs. Let's throw this like 30-second little moment at the end that really screws up. I mean, not screws up the whole thing, because the whole thing was already screwed up to begin with, and it has a lot of inconsistencies, as you all pointed out, but it just made it that much worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's behind us now.
Thank God.
See, it was like a Band-Aid. It was like a 42-minute Band-Aid.
Yeah. The pulling of the Band-Aid stuck in a time loop. Pull, 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 pull.
Anyway. All right. So you guys have any final thoughts on this?
Thought is that I don't have to think about it anymore. That's my final. Yeah. No more thinking.
Yay.
So, but if you have thoughts, if you have things to share with us, if you actually can find some redeeming qualities that outweigh all of the crappy qualities that we've just spent the last 40 plus minutes detailing for you, please make sure you do so. Just try. I dare you. I double dog dare you.
Get cure number 10, because he could only get up to 9.
Oh, number 10. Did I not mention number 10?
No.
Sorry.
We got up to 8.
Number 10 was the fact that, and one of you started to mention it, was the fact that he left him hanging, left Jenny hanging with the explanation. You know, one of these days you're going to have to tell us what that's all about. Yes.
And he just walks off. Positive?
I think that's a positive, because that's what the doctor's about. He's about winding you up and then walking away.
Okay. If it were a regular mystery, I could understand that. But think about where we were in the series. You know, we've been promised the whole time that we're going to find out about Claire and tease the whole time, and here we are like 2 episodes from the end and he's pulling that crap. I'm like, that there's a time and a place.
That really pissed me off. I have to agree that, like, by this time I remember watching it, you know, when I was sitting at home on a Sunday night watching it and going, okay, we're how many episodes in and we still don't know what the hell is going on with Clara. Yeah,
well, that's okay, because this episode really should have been episode 9, not episode 11. So in light of that and the fact that they missequenced the latter half of the series, it's okay. I think somebody goofed, and they really should have run this one in place of Hyde.
Yeah.
Yes.
So. Yeah, I could have accepted that earlier on, yeah, but it's just the placement of where it was, where it actually wound up, was just bad. Mm-hmm. But yeah, go ahead and...
go ahead. Yeah, tweet us at Gallifrey Radio. Yap at us on Facebook. Leave the comments on iTunes. Give Jay a call. Leave him an earful at the voicemail.
Oh yeah, please do.
And once again, I am Bill, so if you have any complaints, let me know.
Yes,
let these guys
we'll
know.
Directly to them. The voicemail number that you can call for inclusion is area code 210-802-1477. If I remember correctly, that is 210-802-1GPR.
Hey, you got it. Right?
Yeah, which is much easier to remember than 2108. Oh, man,
that's so cool.
Or head over to Gallifrey Public Radio and leave us feedback there. Or email direct feedback at gallifreypublicradio.com.
All right. Well, this has been episode 59 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, thank God it's over.
And this is Melissa saying, oh, is Crimson Horror over?
And this is Kira saying, I'm going right out tomorrow and getting myself some big licorice gumdrop contact lenses, because they're cute.
And this is Will saying, Is that cinnamon Christmas candle you're burning?
We'll see you guys next week.
Adelzy.
Ciao.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. Have something to say, something we got wrong, or something you just need to weigh in on? Send us an email at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com or leave us a voicemail at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You can also find us on Twitter at Gallifrey Radio, on Stitcher Smart Radio, Facebook.com/Gallifrey Public Radio, or on iTunes. You can also head over to our homepage at GallifreyPublicRadio.com, where you can leave comments on each episode and get into discussions on the topics we bring up. You can also keep up to date on all the latest news and what's going on in the community. Music by Beyond the Epilogue and Retcon Addict.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2013.
Introduction again in 3, 2, nuts. 1.